Bob Freeland, nice to meet you. He's from the Federal Maritime Administration, and he's going to talk to us about the Maritime Highway Program, among other things, I'm sure.
Thank you. I'm going to stay down here if that's okay with you all. Let me tell you a little bit about what the Maritime Administration is. And this is going to work out real well how we pull it, because he gave you a very good perspective from one mode of transportation's perspective of where the transportation system is. The Maritime Administration is a modal agency within the U.S. Department of Transportation and works with, cooperates with, the Federal Railway Administration, the Federal Highway Administration, Federal Aviation Administration, so we're one of those modal guys. And the perspective I'm going to bring is a little bit different. I'm going to look from the top down, if you will, at our transportation system and where we think it's going to go and what we think, we being the federal agency, remember, I'm from the federal government, so I'm here to help. But where we see things are going and what we think needs to be done, you're going to be seeing a lot of this logo. Unfortunately, I was out in the fight that is at it. The Maritime Administration has traditionally been a blue water agency. We don't have any of those little 20 valve things here in the living waterway. So our towboats have towbees and a square off front end. But the point we're trying to make here is we see the need to utilize America's Marine Highways, which are the coastliner waterways and inland waterways, the rivers. If we're going to be able to move all the goods that are going to have to move to support our economy into the future. You know, this is kind of a key thing right here. Now, we're falling off because of the economic position our country's in right now. But I'm kind of like Warren Buffett. I'm still that glass half full guy. I think we're going to come out and it's going to be a demand for increased tonnage to move this part of our economy. If for no other reason, I'm sure, inertia of the size of our country and the fact that our country is continuing to grow. If we have more people, if we have a broader distribution of those people, we're going to have to support them. We're going to have to support them with goods to make them able to live their lives. Transportation provides that means to support those people so they can live. This is something that a lot of us don't talk about, the interstate highway system. What Paul had up there was very correct. The trucks move the vast majority of the tonnage that you and I see every day. But they're moving an awful lot of that over an awful or an extremely small amount of our nation's roads. That's why if any of you drove Highway 70 to get here, you know, for every car you pass, you probably pass at least half a truck, which I did this morning on the way over here. You go down Highway 64 is the same way, Highway 55 is the same way. And the demands for trucking are changing also. We have an organization called the Heartland Intermodal Partnership where we try to bring here all modes of transportation. And you know, wheels along the wheel, kind of involved in some of this over here. What we were learning was that all the modes of transportation were recognizing the fact that there's going to be increasing demands on their systems. And there's changing demands for them. For example, for the truckers, they're having a hard time finding drivers. They're having a hard time finding drivers who are willing to go overnight or multi-night trips. Everybody wants to be home, so they're not at home. The railroads, as you just heard, recognize the fact that if that train isn't moving through Chicago, they're not making money. So if they can avoid those congestion points, they're going to be able to get better utilization of their equipment, and they're going to be able to increase their bottom line. The highway congestion has increased dramatically between 83 and 203. It's fallen off now a little bit, but it's going to pick up again. It's going to pick up within the next couple of years. It's almost inevitable. These are the major freight bottlenecks. And if you talk to the railroad folks here, you're going to see that many of their choke points, many of their bottlenecks are in basically the same areas. Look at this map, keep this map in mind, where the majority of these bottlenecks are. We talk about emissions, you know, and you chart a little bit about that. Our numbers differ just a little bit from what Paul said, but basically we're the same. same type of thing here. If we look at the gallons per mile, and here we get capacity, and this is kind of a key issue too. If you look at a bar show, if we were carrying containers now, and we're not, the only containers that actually move on the inner waterways are on the Columbia Snake River right now. There's a lot of reasons why we're not moving containers on the Mississippi River's tributaries. When you say that the Mississippi River's tributaries are the Ohio River, the Missouri River, the Arkansas River, the Red River, all those rivers that feed into the Mississippi River. We've moved a few, very few, I can probably count on one hand the number of barges that were loaded with containers out of St. Louis in the last year. That's going to change. And what's going to change it is the third canal down in Panama. When we start putting post-Panamax size container ships through that canal, it's going to change traffic patterns worldwide. You're going to start seeing a lot of container ships that are currently going to the East Coast, to Philadelphia, to Boston, to Norfolk, and the West Coast, primarily to LA Long Beach, going to the Gulf Coast, if those products are going to be distributed to the center of our country. When we start seeing Mobile and New Orleans opening up in Galveston to container movements, you're going to see barges moving containers up and down the river. Now, from our perspective, again, from the Department of Transportation, we're looking at the optimal utilization of our transportation system. We're not interested in taking traffic away from the railroads. We're not interested in taking traffic away from trucks. We're looking at the optimal way, the most efficient way, the most economical way of getting that product from our coast port of embarkation to the customer, to the consumer. And what we see is, and Paul is right, it's very, very expensive to build a new right-of-way for a railroad. I mean, they're pretty well stuck with what they have right now, unless they're going to spend an awful lot of money. The trucks go back to the congestion we have on our highways right now. We're not going to build too many more interstate highways because of the cost to it. Where do we have some existing capacity where we could transfer some of those products? And that's to water. Here again, that's hopefully the anomaly we're experiencing right now. Once we get past that, we will hope to see, maybe not that steep, but we want to see that type of an increase. So, as of this year, our economists are still saying we expect to see international trade double by the year 2020. Now, it may get pushed off for a couple of years, but it's still in the future. That's what they're still saying. They may not be saying it as loud as they used to, but they're still telling us that. This is, again, kind of key. Right now, we're moving 2% of our domestic freight by water. Europe moves 44%, China moves 61%, and China's going to move even more because they have adopted our system of inland towboats and barges. In fact, we sold them quite a few towboats and barges over the last 10 years, and we've been training some of the pilots. And kind of interesting, I have a Chinese delegation over here at least once a year to look at our inland waterway system to find out what we're doing right that they can emulate in China. It's kind of scary when you look at the big picture. But again, this is that map you're looking at, the major freight bottlenecks. Here's the inland waterway system. A lot of those largest bottlenecks are adjacent to these rivers. The American Freight Highway is an initiative that was authorized under the Energy Act last year. We're working with the State Department of Transportation, and in fact, Ernie and I were talking just before I came up here about the Missouri Department of Transportation School. Where are the action corridors? Some of the corridors that are coming into this area are I-55, which basically runs from Chicago to New Orleans. I-70, which runs all the way across the mid-part of the United States and basically parallels the Ohio River. And then I-66, which is back down here from Norfolk, runs through Cape Girardeau. These are corridors that we've identified and we would hope to utilize as an inbound as we start seeing containers moving on waterways. How are we going to get them from Mobile, New Orleans, as they come up to Kentown, as they come up the Mississippi River, back out into the hinterlands where the consumers? And so we're identifying these corridors, we're looking at the ports, we're looking at the interfaces, we're looking at the interface between rail, truck, and water, and what can we as the Department of Transportation do to make that interface work more efficiently? Let's say we're designating corridors now, and really this is a program that's expensive. I mean, we're working with a bucket of steam that's full drain right now, trying to focus that steam so we can put a valve on it and direct it and make it work the way we want it to work. Once the corridors are established, once coalitions, the state DOTs, the MPOs, the private sector, the rail, the truck, the waterways get together along those corridors to work in concert, we can identify projects. Those projects would be utilized, or would probably be utilized, to improve the interstate connectors between the interstate and the port, so you can get the product off the water, onto a truck, off the truck, onto water. In the same way, how are we going to interact the short line railroads and the class one railroads? How are we going to get those containers moving both ways, from rail to water and rail? Our goal is to make our transportation system as efficient as possible. And the way we make it as efficient as possible is to utilize the strengths of each of these transportation systems. Each one has a very strong asset base, if you will. Traditionally, waterways move bulk commodities. You couldn't afford to put 1,500 tons of microwaves into a barge and move it from any applicable calls in New Orleans. It just took too long. It was unpredictable because you have to deal with the weather. You're dealing with locks of mid-grade down. You're dealing with rivers of make flood. You don't have a lot of control over all the circumstances. You're going to take those microwaves. You're going to put them in containers. You're going to put them on the rail. And you're going to get them from Minneapolis to New Orleans to less than a week, traditionally. Those times are changing. As we move containers, more containers to the river, the shippers can start building in the transit times. They can start building in the interfaces with the other modes. So that maybe they're going to increase their overall transit time by a week or 10 days, but they're going to be guaranteed that container is going to come in by ship to New Orleans. It's going to go to Memphis. It's going to come off Memphis. It's going to go onto a railroad. It's going to go onto a truck, and it's going to be delivered. That efficiency is going to be key. These next steps are in the future. Right now, we're right up here. We're designating corridors and we're trying to establish the coalitions. And I'll be working with many of you in the near future to try and establish these things. So we're ready to go when we get the legislation, probably the language put into the Surface Transportation Act, that will further define this program and start setting aside money for pilot projects. A lot of you guys have a real short time. Any questions? Yes,
do you see the federal government having money available for some of the port and transshipment facilities that will be necessary to become a reality? I'm thinking of where they, when you say Memphis or St. Louis or wherever the terminals are for container shipments, they don't necessarily have the port facilities to handle that transit.
Now, here in the Bahamas, we really don't. The nice thing is, for containers, the threshold to overcome to start handling containers is fairly low. Classic example is the Tri-City Regional Port, which is Granite City, just north of St. Louis on the east side. They've loaded several barge loads of empty containers at this point, and all they've really utilized is crawler crane with four chains of hooks where they grab the corners of the container at the end route. And the next evolution would be, if you have enough containers moving to your port, you get a spreader to make that move a little bit faster and ultimately get a container crane. You can utilize the existing marine equipment
you have to modify large shipyard containers into 20- or 40-foot containers. There's even put as much, if you're going to go from one of the nice things about this, if you're going to load a container, let's say St. Louis, and you're going to move it to New Orleans, and it's never really going to get to a certain street of any kind, highway or county road or interstate highway, you can put as much of that container as you can possibly get in there. You can load stuff and put as much of it as you can because the barge doesn't care. Now, as soon as you hit the county road or the service street beyond the port, then you're going to have to pay attention to the regulations. Yes, sir.
The question I had about surface transportation, does surface transportation have to be an engine or can it be water?
In what way?
When certain federal agencies talk about, you know, only money can be used for certain for surface transportation.
Right.
Is a water surface. I mean,
traditionally, okay. I understand where you're coming from. For example, under Federal Highway Administration, some of those are funds. You can use money from the sort of transportation bills, like I see some of the others in the past, to improve an interchange, to improve a road to the gate of the port. Nothing inside of the port. Now, what the energy bill does, it opens up a whole new arena for us to work with, which we're still trying to define. So, yeah, and what I'm doing, my responsibility with the Maritime Administration is to show that navigation. So I work with the towboats and barges, and I'm the director of the office who's responsible for that. One of my jobs is to work with the ports, the inland ports, to make sure that when we start seeing containers going on the rivers, they're ready to do something. Now that involves a couple of different things. It involves the interface that we were talking about before between rail and truck. It also includes having an area sufficiently sized and adjacent to where your dock is so that you can store, sort, and move containers. It means they have to have cranes capable of moving those containers, and then they have to have the software, if you will, and the training of the people. They have to know how to do it. They have to know how to take a container and put it in a barge, how to take it out of a barge, move it to a rolling chassis, put it on a rail car. You know, the training is all there, and that's something I'm working with even forced to do it. They're all very, very interested in doing this and moving ahead. Track City already has it in their short and long-term plan. They've set aside acreage. In fact, they're designing an Austrian port right now, an Austrian harbor just going on 27th above St. Louis, where they're going to be handling initially ethanol and eventually they're going to be handling potatoes when that time comes. Pittsburgh is very interested in it. The ports in the Upper Ohio River down in Huntington, that area, are very interested. And they're looking at what needs to be done, what areas they have to set aside so they don't put something else on it in the interim, but it's there available when the potatoes come. That's right.
Bob, I guess most of the state DOTs would also be here for you to get their in Missouri, as far as identifying federal funds to be used. We had gotten some earmarks, you're right, to put in the access improvements to improve the intermodal connectors. We have gotten some very low discretionary funds with it, very low co-located with the ports, but the line is falling. You've got to be real careful in that area. Now, we are using about $5 million of our transportation stimulus dollars to do 5 projects on 4 ports in Missouri, but the majority of our funding we've got to do our port projects has been from our state legislature through general revenue, which is very political. I mean, it goes up and down. Last year, we got $6.5 million. So this year, actually, we're doing $11 million in projects on our ports. It's been the best year we've ever had. Most of that money is going into rail extensions, siting, rail intermodal connectors, we're doing some storage capacity, utility extensions, mainly to improve the intermodal connectors. I'd be curious if any other states are doing anything else you'd like to learn from that, but that's kind of how it works for us.
Missouri is doing a good job on that.
Sure.
I don't know if we skip to Illinois, but Illinois is using economic development funds in the past. To fund airport development, Ohio's done pretty much the same thing. Indiana has a subcategory of their state government where they try to put some money into the works. But the beauty of this is, again, once we have these quarters established, we have a program authorized under the energy law, but we needed to find it under the Surface Transportation Act.
Yes, sir.
Do you have a picture of the Inland Marine Highway that you guys have still seeing, okay? Do you have something?
They actually haven't been designated yet.
Okay.
You know, officially, that's where they are.
Maybe a trick question.
Yeah.
Tell us about the I-90 Marine Highway.
You could probably find a better guide than what I know, but that's
pretty much what Interstate 90 has
connected
all the state, and it gets into Minnesota, and 35, to Duluth.
What they're doing, they're calling it I-35, a connector to the corridor. They're doing the same thing with I-5 or I-95.
And then we'll have, like, inland, it's my understanding, like I said, it's called I-90, and then it'll have drop-down corridors.
Right.
So it'll have, as it comes around on that interstate, and it gets distributed through the United States via...
We're trying to work with state DOTs initially and say, all right, now, if we have a corridor, I-90, what makes the most sense? How would you connect that with the ports? How would you connect that with the waterways? And then how would you work to make the whole system more efficient by moving cargo both ways? And I wish I could give you more, but it's a conflict right now. Yes, sir.
Have you done a business plan yet or an economic analysis of whether or not this transfer from ocean-going vessels to waterway trucks would be economically competitive with other modes? I say that because when I worked in the Marine Kansas, we were moving containers to Hong Kong under one building all the way to Chicago, $2,400, out of that $2,400, $600 in transshipment charges. Mm-hmm. And of course, in the earlier major expense. And we looked at Highway 82 through Duluth and Lake Erie, in the Ohio Forge, as a viable option because there's only one transfer point on that one off the railroad and onto the water area in Duluth, which would be done. Again, with existing equipment and offshore labor, using the road area. But if you have multiple transfer points, and you look at what that does to your competitiveness, say, okay, cut off, or whatever you want.
They've done a basic business plan. You know, that's something that you and I would invest money in at this point. But it's based on the congestion points in the back. It's based on the congestion points and what those congestion points cost now, increasing the cost of moving those products. So they're saying, we've got a pretty good idea of what it costs to move product, well, let's use Chicago. I'll probably give a good example of that one. You know, if it takes a day to move a train through Chicago, how much money would you save if you were able to transfer that commodity off of the train and onto another mode of transportation before you get that congestion point. Now, you know, a lot depends. Does it terminate there? Does it move on? There's a lot of variables that come into play there. But the preliminary assessment we've seen is that with the increasing volume that we anticipate, with the existing congestion that we have, this is a viable alternative. But we have a lot of work to do to make it work. And that's improving the connectors, improving the interface. That's a big, big component of it. And that's what we're trying to get our hands on now. Okay.
Any other questions?
I'll be around a little bit if you think about it. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.